Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma, and we are both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
And then the sun's out just in time. So you bought me sunglasses last week, didn't you?
Yeah, I did buy you sunglasses.
It's great, mate.
Yeah. Well, you know, I try and make sure all the conditions are right.
Yeah.
We've got a cool show planned.
Yes, we have.
We are talking to Lina Chan.
We are.
Who is the founder of Ardia.
She is, yeah. Lina was introduced to me by someone that I used to work with, actually. And he was like, you guys should talk, because Lina's doing something really interesting. And we did talk, and she is doing something really interesting. And she's got a great story. Not a great story.
A difficult story.
A difficult story, but it was an emotional one. And, it's you know, it's all the reasons that she started Adia.
Yeah.
Which is all about giving people information and kind of empowering people and giving them access to experts.
Which it's kind of what we tried to do.
We tried to do it less of a kind of...
It's less direct.
Less direct, yeah.
Yeah. But also we've got Professor Tim, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Who's talking about needing a wee?
Needing a wee.
He doesn't need a wee.
He does. He always needs a wee. He wanted to chat to us about it. One of our listeners actually wrote in and said, why didn't you ask him about why you need to have a full bladder going for a transfer?
Yeah, and it's a really good question.
It is really good because it's, you know, it's not ideal, is it?
It's not comfortable.
No, it's not.
You got somebody shoving something up your vag, somebody pressing down on your stomach, and you need a wee.
I need a wee.
Yeah, so there's that. And then, slightly bad news, listeners.
Yeah.
No show next week.
That's a no show.
No show.
Shouldn't tell them why.
Because I'm going on holiday.
Yep. Emma's going on leave and we must let her.
Yep. I'm taking some time out for me, you guys.
Fly, my pretty, fly.
I will. All the way to Italy. So we're leaving the in-laws in charge of the flat and the cat. And we're buggering off to sunnier climes with our friends. And it's going to be delightful. I'm going to eat so much pizza.
Good.
And pasta.
Good.
And also the region that we're going to specialises in raw fish. Not so great for me.
Okay.
Yeah. But the rest is fine.
Yeah. Maybe stick to the oricetti. That's what they specialise in Puglia.
What's oricetti?
It's a type of pasta. It's like a thumbprint pasta.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
There you go.
I'll stick to that. So no show next week, but we will be back the following week.
Yes, we will.
In the meantime, we've got a letter from a listener.
Ooh. A letter from a listener?
Yeah, and this is basically kind of becoming a regular feature now.
Mm.
Not so regular that we'll call it a regular feature.
No.
But regular enough that it's informally regular.
Indeed, which is exciting.
Yeah. So last week on the podcast, we had the lovely Nadia.
Yes, we did.
And we talked about metformin and Clomid, and I am an idiot.
Oh, I see. I didn't know.
And I said that metformin and Clomid are kind of the same thing.
Right.
No, no, no.
Oh. Oh, oh, oh.
Imama has been in touch.
Oh.
And she has written a really long thing, and I'm going to try and read it without falling over any words.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. She says, I wonder if you would like to know.
Yes is the answer.
Yes is the answer, Mama. Metformin is not a Clomid substitute. Metformin hydrochloride is a biguanide. Biguanide? Biguanide?
Sounds like a
guanine. Can you let us know how to pronounce it, please? A guanidine is a strong basic crystalline compound that's administered to synthesize a chemical release. A biguanide is made of crystalline with two basic properties. It's sort of like two guanidines smushed together. So metformin is working two jobs. To understand that, let's talk about insulin first. Insulin is a hormone that controls blood sugar, glucose, by encouraging cells to take sugar out of the bloodstream. When cells become insulin resistant, the blood sugar levels rise too high, and that, listeners, is common among PCOS sufferers.
Indeed.
Metformin's first property is that it increases cell sensitivity to insulin. Cells can now remove sugar from the blood more effectively than without it. Secondly, metformin reduces sugar production by the liver and delays the release of sugar from the intestines into the bloodstream. In this way, it lessens the blood sugar spike after meal consumption. For these reasons, it's used to control or prevent type 2 diabetes. People with PCOS often have high insulin levels. Cells adapt by becoming less sensitive, leading to insulin resistance. Additionally, high insulin encourages androgen production, including testosterone. These inhibit fertility. Ovaries are stimulated by some androgen exposure, but too much depresses them. Metformin is prescribed for PCOS, predominantly to increase cell sensitivity to insulin, lowering overall insulin levels and often weight as well. As a result, androgen production, like testosterone, decreases to a more normal level and interferes with ovulation and other fertility processes less. Clomid, on the other hand, is used to stimulate ovulation. It blocks the estrogen receptors in the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus senses an imbalance and releases follicle-stimulating hormone, our old friend FSH, and luteinizing hormone, our old friend LH, to encourage ovulation. And then she says, sorry it's so long-winded. There are just lots of misconceptions. And she would be right.
I think that's really interesting.
It's really interesting. And also, I was like, where did you get all this from?
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah, I was like, are we going to be violating copyrights if we read that out? And she was like, I'm pre-med. And I was like, okay. So no copyright violation. Thanks, Imama. That's really helpful.
Great.
Yeah. And on that note,
enjoy today's podcast.
For it is your last for a week.
For two weeks.
So please rate and review us.
Yeah.
Double time.
Yes, please.
Maybe rate and review us just like on next Tuesday when we're not released.
Oh.
Just because you miss us.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Spend that time that you would have spent listening. Write a good nice
review. Because we all know that absence makes the heart grow fonder.
It does indeed.
And you can follow us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
On Twitter.
At Big Fat Negative.
On Facebook.
Big Fat Negative.
Or you can email us.
BigFatNegativePodcast@gmail.com.
And I think we're up to date on emails as well.
I think we are.
Yeah. Guys, have a lovely couple of weeks.
Indeed. Have a good one.
Lena, it's so great to have you on here.
Thank you so much for having me here. Yeah, really excited to be here.
So I'm going to start in a slightly non-traditional way and ask you a bit about ADIA and how it came about.
Okay. So ADIA is a company that I founded last year. And it was very much inspired by my journey through trying to conceive and then eventually my pregnancy. So basically, I never thought I was going to have a problem trying to conceive because I basically spent my entire 20s trying to avoid getting pregnant.
Classic.
And I thought like, oh, this is going to be easy, you know, particularly because I came from a family of four and my husband came from a family of three. Like, I never thought it'd be a challenge.
Yeah.
And, so when I started trying, I was past 35 with no idea of what fertility was or any of that. And our first baby, which we did conceive, we ended up losing quite late stage. It was a stillbirth. And that kind of totally turned my life upside down because I didn't even know what this word stillbirth was until it happened. And you're just never in that mindset, right? Like when you're pregnant, you're always thinking about birth. You're not thinking about death.
No. Yeah, of course.
So that completely kind of shocked us, both of us. And it meant that then the second time we tried to conceive, it took us a really long time, almost over a year at the point where we were actually starting to consider doing IVF. Mm-hmm. But then I did manage to conceive right at that. I think it was like the month we were going to go see the IVF doctor. And then I miscarried that second one. And then it was even harder because I think then the trauma of the two losses meant that it was, I must have blocked it. I don't know how, but then we finally did conceive the third one, and then she was born premature at 32 weeks. So then we spent time at the NICU.
And how long were you in there for?
So she was born at 32 weeks and we were there for about 4 weeks. Oh, God. So kind of, I'm almost getting her to term, like at 37 weeks, and then we left, and she was fine. She was tiny, but she was fine. And then our second daughter, I managed to then carry her to term. So through all these different journeys, I just realized like I was constantly on my back foot. I felt like I was constantly unprepared. I was over relying on Dr. Google. And one thing that really kind of the tipping point of what changed my life was one day a friend of mine said, okay, you need to go see this doctor. It was after we had had all the losses, and I, you know, I stepped into his office, and the one thing he said to me is like, you know, obstetrics is really reactive, and it's really backwards. Yeah. And by the time women come to see me, they've been suffering for so long. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, the first thing we need to help you with is actually build your confidence back.
Mm, okay.
And it was a turning point for me because it was just such a different way of looking at me and my struggles, and even helping me kind of think about what I should be doing. And he actually told me and my husband to stop trying. And he said, for the next 3 months, I just want you to feel like, really work on getting healthy again. We're going to do all these tests to figure out why is it that you can't carry your pregnancies. And I really wanted you to focus on your emotional well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, we did a ton of tests. And the other thing that he did was he didn't just test me. He tested me and my husband. Because I think historically, whenever women lose their pregnancies, they only focus on the woman. Yeah. And he's like, it's the two of you we need to test and really understand the full picture here. So, and then through those tests, I went on to find out that I had a precondition. And that's what was causing, that's definitely what caused the first loss. So in a way, I was lucky in the sense that I found the reason. So we had then a pregnancy plan, and he was able to then coach me exactly on what I had to do. So I had to take copious amounts of folic acid, and I had to take an injection every day. But then it was once I felt pregnant then that I was able to keep my pregnancy. So long story to why Aria. So, you know, our mission is really to help women be a lot more proactive about fertility and pregnancy. And the way we do that is really educating them about preconception health and how important it is for you to be armed with knowledge about your body and what you can do to improve your fertility and really understand where you are.
Yeah.
So, you know, so we provide hormone tests where you can really understand like your fertility, and not just your fertility, but your ovulation, how you would react to IVF if you ever needed it, menopause. But then really we also provide all the support. So women can message with obstetrician, fertility specialists, clinical psychologists and nutritionists all on our platform. They have direct access to them. They don't have to go through the GP. And then we have a wealth of education information. So from a nutrition program to meditations that they can download and listen. And then also a ton of articles about women's health that's written by doctors, because I mean, I still use Dr. Google every once in a while, like, you know, I think there's some things that is just quite important for women, especially to understand about their bodies, that for us, we really made a point that we wanted doctors to write those and put those out there for women, so that everything that's on our platform has been written by a doctor.
Brilliant.
It's such a frustrating thing, isn't it, when you're going through fertility problems or even pregnancy, that you have an issue. I always bled at the weekend. Every time I've ever had spotting during this pregnancy, it started on a Friday night.
Exactly.
So, you know, the idea of having access to an expert,
it's pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was that part of the kind of thinking?
Yes. And it was because, so this doctor who I met, he was amazing. He really kind of understood that for a woman who had gone through the struggles that I went through, my emotional well-being was really important.
Yeah.
And there's been a number of studies that have shown that emotional well-being can impact it's epigenetics, it's called. It can impact the baby. Like if a woman is really, really stressed out, like the baby will be born with higher cortisol, etc. So, and just kind of like your day in, day out, right? It's like all of us around the table have a higher level of anxiety when it comes to pregnancy and fertility and stuff. So, he always was. I could email him at any point, and he would respond, and that immediately would make me feel a lot calmer. And then I had actually done a research, or I was doing a research on all these clinical trials that they had done, and there was one pretty big trial that they did where they interviewed hundreds of women who had multiple miscarriages.
Yeah.
And asked them what are the things that they felt that most helped them reduce their anxiety and improve their mental health and well-being. And the three main things that came up was, one, access to ability to ask questions to doctors. Mm-hmm. The second one was meditation, and third one was peer support. So that's one thing that we really make a point of having on ADIA. So people can message doctors at any point, because that can really help them reduce their anxiety. Mm-hmm. Meditations we provide, you can download and listen to them. And we're growing our community. And it's through that we hope that by sharing people's stories, sharing our own stories, we can help that dialogue, which I think is very helpful to women.
So, I mean, I don't want to dwell on this, but can you talk to us a little bit about how you were feeling before you went to see that doctor? He said that you'd lost your confidence. Is that how you would describe it as well?
Oh yeah. I mean, I blamed myself for everything. Mm. When I lost her, I was exercising and I thought, I was constantly thinking like, oh, you know, it was probably because I did that one class. You know, I overdid it on yoga. And so it was like a constant stream of all the things I did in those last 7 months that could have caused that. Mm-hmm. So I just blamed myself for everything. And so when I went into his office, he just realized it, because all the nature of my questions was self-blame.
Mm, okay.
So he realized that my confidence was really, was pretty shattered by it. And we had gone back to my original doctor, the first doctor I had seen, and his approach was like, oh, you know, the chances of this happening, like the chances of a woman experiencing multiple losses is so low that for this to happen to you again, it's so low that you should just go and do whatever you've been doing and you'll be fine. But for me, it was more like I lost so late stage, and that's actually not the norm. I mean, you know, pregnancy loss is common, but late stage is not as common. So I really wanted answers, and I realized that I might not get those answers, but I really wanted to do tests. I wanted to, and he didn't open that door. So I kind of started going around trying to find somebody who would test me and just figure out, like, was there something wrong?
Mm.
And, you know, and maybe it was part of me still, again, trying to find a blame in me. But then by running the test, it was so empowering, because one, it told me what was working and what wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And for the things that weren't working, I could at least feel like I there was something for me to do that. And that's not the case with everybody. There are a lot of people who lose and it's unexplained.
Yeah.
But
and can you tell us about the condition that they diagnosed you with?
So I have MTHFR, homo something other. Basically, I don't produce enough folic acid. it's what I've understood. So what happened with my first pregnancy was that I had so much blood clotting on my placenta that the blood wasn't flowing between me and the baby.
Okay.
So she wasn't growing. She wasn't getting enough oxygen. So she died. That's how she died in utero.
Gosh, so hard it must be so hard to find out something like that could have prevented, but you just have no idea about.
Yeah, and that was at the core of it, and that's at the core of ADIA, was because I just felt like, oh gosh, if I had known that, could I have prevented all this? And maybe I couldn't have, you know, maybe we all have our paths, and maybe there's a higher force that pushes us through all of this. But I think it goes back to that confidence point. Is if you have the data, if you know, I think you do feel more confident. You do feel a little bit more empowered, even if the outcome is not positive. You at least feel like, I did all I could. You know?
Yeah.
So it was a little bit like,
So Gabby and I in our day jobs are both business journalists. So it's kind of, it's hard to have an entrepreneur sitting here without questioning you a little bit about how you started your business and how you turned your experience into a business idea. Like, what were the steps
that I did? So the very, very early days, I partnered with Jess. So she's one of the doctors that are our advisors. And, you know, we'd have just these conversations because she treated me. Every time I had a bleed, I went to emergency at St. Mary's, and she was the consultant at emergency. So she saw me a lot.
You got to know each other.
So we got to know each other a lot. And, you know, and we talked about, you know, what, you know, I think one of the things that she was seeing is how, you know, women come in and out of the system. So, and she has a special interest in miscarriage. Mm-hmm. She did a really big study looking at women that had multiple miscarriages and the emotional impact that they had after. And it was covered widely by BBC, a bunch of publications, where she was able to show that a lot of them, 70% of them, go to develop PTSD.
Wow.
Yeah. So we were talking about that, and we were talking about, you know, is there something we can build to just help women just feel better and more supported through all of this? And we came up with this idea of, like, oh, wouldn't it be great to just have this companion that knew you from day one and would just follow you until you either had a baby or didn't have a baby, all the way to menopause? And and that's kind of like the early days of it, how we literally, like, I'd go have tea with her and we'd talk about this. So I said, well, you know, let's try. And I started putting a business plan together, applied to a program at Google. And I was at the time pregnant with Talia. So I was almost 9 months pregnant, and the cesarean was scheduled on the day the application was due. And I'm like, this is a sign.
Oh my God.
I'm going to submit it. I'm going to submit this application. So I submitted this application, got into the program, and it was great. So I did 10 weeks there, developed the business plan, and then heard about Zinc VC, which is an accelerator. And then off the back of that, applied to join Zinc. I got accepted into Zinc. And then I did the 6 months at Zinc, found my co-founders at Zinc, and we launched a small beta and raised our funds on the back of that. So then we closed our pre-seed round last summer.
That's really exciting.
I know, it was really exciting.
It's really fun to kind of merge the day job with the evening job.
Yeah.
So what were you doing before that?
I was an investor. I basically worked in private equity investing for a good 10 years.
Okay. So you knew what you were doing. Wow. How did it feel to go? I mean, obviously you say that you were kind of about to pop. Mm-hmm. How did it feel to go from kind of the city to running your own thing?
I mean, there were so great things about my old job, but it wasn't my passion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by the time that I decided to do this, I had already been struggling or trying to conceive and having the pregnancies, etc., for about 3 years.
Okay.
And through all of that, I was coaching other women, other friends that were going through that. And my husband, he's a tech entrepreneur, and he's like, you should just start, this should be your day job. Like, why are you mucking around in, you know, private equity when this is what you're really passionate about? So he really kind of pushed me. And I think once you start a family, these trade-offs, especially one that you've really struggled to build, the trade-offs become big. So I said, okay, well, you're right. Like, if I want to work on something that's going to take me away from my family, I want to really work on something that's that I'm really passionate about. And that also I kind of have my own, I can own it a little bit more. I mean, it's crazy and it's hectic and we work crazy hours, but, you know, I can work from 7 to 1 a.m. if I want to. And that's fine. And make sure that I'm there for bedtime and dinner and all that. So it felt like it was the right thing to do then.
Amazing. I think you've done, because you've had 3 children now?
Now we have. Yeah. We've been very lucky.
And we've just met baby Kaya.
Yes.
Who's beautiful and smells really great. obviously, pregnancy after loss is such an anxious time, such a difficult time. How did you manage that anxiety? You've talked a bit about meditation and things like that.
I did a lot of that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I did a lot of meditation. I did every night. I did meditation. I meditated. And it helped. It just kind of helped me calm down. You know, all the anxieties I had, it just helped me. And I had Jess on my text message.
Oh my God. I need to get a doctor's mobile number.
We're yet to get to that level.
Yeah.
So I would message her with any questions, and just having, I don't know, I think you need to kind of figure out what are some of your triggers. So for me was trying to reduce as much the triggers of anxiety. Mm-hmm. So you know, one thing I was telling you about was I just did not let anybody give me gifts. I didn't want anything to do with the baby. Like, I didn't want clothes. I didn't want to talk about names or gender. I refused to have a nursery. And it was just to make sure that I didn't have any of those baby triggers around me.
Yeah.
Especially because after having had loss, like, I couldn't help. Like, every time I went to the bathroom, I was scared that I was going to see blood. It's like, I don't think you can really stop that from happening. Mm-hmm. But at the end of every day, I really made a point to set aside 10, 15 minutes where I just meditated and relaxed. And you know, my doctor encouraged me to work out, but I didn't want to. I was like, I just, you know, as much as they would say, like, that's not what's going to cause you to lose, I was like, I don't want to be in a position that I might do that and then feel. So you just kind of need to be really self-aware of what your triggers are and try to minimize those. And so that's kind of how I coped. Well, and I think also it's important to share it with your partner. So I shared with Tyler openly all the things that was anxious to me, and he stopped traveling on, like, in the later months, because I just felt like I really needed somebody around. So he had business trips he had to say no. He had his mate's ski trip that he said no to, and I think it's, you know, he was really supportive of just doing things to help me manage my anxiety and just kind of, because it's, you can't help it. And even the doctor was like, I'm not going to tell you not to be anxious, because I know you're going to be anxious. Yeah. So it's probably better to acknowledge it. And like, you know, we can do things to help you cope with it, but it's going to be there.
I totally, I say everything to my husband as well, just because I feel like if I voice my silly anxieties and the catastrophizing that I'm doing, that then I can, it's out there, and like, it's probably not going to happen because I've said it. You know what I mean?
I know. And I definitely has, like, with our first daughter, because she was one, I think because she was born preterm, but I definitely had kind of like clear PTSD symptoms, or like OCD. Like I had all of those. It's more kind of PTSD where, I mean, I thought she was going to die if she missed a feed, or there was, because like, I think you just are in that different mindset where you've constantly seen loss. And it wasn't until my second daughter that I kind of relaxed a little bit more. Okay. And I was like, and my husband was great about it because he didn't make me feel bad that I was having those catastrophic visions or whatever it was. And he just really tried to bring reassurance in other ways. So I remember I was having this like just meltdown about breastfeeding and her not getting enough milk and stuff, and he's like, look, let's get a maternity nurse if that's going to help you feel more calm. And so I think that's it's really a partnership, and if you have the luxury of having a partner there during this phase, it's just be open and talk about all the shit that's going on in your head, because there's a lot going on in your head constantly.
Absolutely.
A lot of the women that I speak to that are kind of going through losses or have been through losses have got quite annoyed with their partners, male partners, I should say. I haven't spoken to anyone with female partners. But because they will be just relentlessly optimistic until it's fully confirmed that everything's gone wrong.
Yeah.
Did you ever have that kind of experience?
Yes. I would really encourage, I need to remember the book name and I'll send it to you guys. Okay. But there was one book that I read it's literally super thin. It was two books that actually really helped me. One was called Empty Arms.
Yeah.
And the other one was How Men and Women Cope Differently. And they're both very specific to pregnancy loss.
Okay.
And they were super helpful to me because I remember distinctly when we had the first pregnancy loss, I remember thinking, I really don't want this to destroy me, and I really don't want this to destroy my marriage.
Yeah.
And it was just like this immediate thought I had.
Yeah.
And maybe it's something for me to focus on that I felt like I, again, could control and try to make things better. And this book really talks a lot about how men and women grieve differently, and the role of how men always feel like they need to protect and help. And
so that
book really helped us feel a way of being open about it and talking about it. Because, for example, like, I remember the first couple of weeks, I was just nonstop talk. I talked about it all the time, and Tyler didn't. And I started getting angry at him because I'm like, why aren't you talking about it? Like, you're not grieving, you're not as sad. And and it wasn't. And eventually what we got to was because he felt like he couldn't, because if he broke down, he felt like I was going to break down more. And he kind of felt he felt like he needed to be strong and he needed to be positive, because if he was negative, I was really going to spiral down. And then but that book basically allowed us to have that dialogue and realize that men and women interpret their roles differently. And there's time for different things. And we started writing a lot. So, you know, we would write letters to her, or we would write letters to each other. Some we shared, some we didn't. Mm-hmm. But you start realizing how to communicate. So I definitely that was those were there were things that he did do that. But then I went on to realize that he was doing that because he was trying to protect me. But sometimes that's not what a woman needs.
Do you feel like your experience of motherhood after infertility or fertility difficulties has been affected?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, with my first one, it's only literally after I had my second one that I look back and I think of how neurotic I was. And to my own, it was such clear PTSD, where I obsessed about her feeds. I constantly thought I didn't have enough milk. You know, if she coughed funny, I thought she was gonna die. Mm-hmm. If you know, it was trauma. It was literally trauma it was probably the first 4 months it was like that. I just saw danger everywhere. And it was how I parented. Yeah. And how I took care of her, and it was really tiring for him. It was really hard for him. But he stuck with me. And now I really do thank him a lot, because he let me, rather than make me, and I think that's what was quite different from the losses. That the losses, there were times that he was trying to make me feel positive. Here, he never tried to make me feel like what I was feeling was wrong. He never made me feel like, oh, you're exaggerating, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. He was always like, okay, so what can we do to make you feel better? Like, I must have taken her to the doctor almost once a month for no reason. You know what I mean? And now I can look back and say, but like, I was like, she's not gaining weight enough. Like, you know, we bought a scale so that I could weigh her every day. Like, it was kind of like that level until eventually I was like, okay, what am I doing? And I think you slowly start getting out of that, but it definitely affected me. I don't think it affects everybody, but it was so, now looking back, it was so clear that it affected me.
And I suppose you've kind of already given a fair bit of advice, but if there was someone listening that has suffered similar losses, would you have anything that you would say to them to help them get
share,
through?
Yeah. Talk about it. I mean, I spent so much time on the web reading other women's stories. It was through that I found strength. It was through other lost moms that reached out to me that I found strength and found the best resources. So I remember I was in hospital, and actually a really good friend of Tyler, she lost her baby at 40 weeks.
Wow.
It was the day before her due date, and she lost her baby, and I mean it tore them apart, obviously. And she had heard about us, and she doesn't know me, and she just sent me an email. She sent me an email with, you know, shared her story, said, these are the books I read, you know, call me whenever you want. And I think we did well because of that, because she reached out so early to me. And I felt like I had one person at least and we basically became email pen pals, where I was able to share with her all that I was thinking and feeling. And it's a roller coaster, right? There's one day that you feel great, and there's another day that you feel like you're going to die. Mm-hmm. And that all air has been taken out of you and you can barely breathe. And she was there, and she explained how that happened to her, and that grief is not linear. And that was like, you know, we blame ourselves so much, and we can internalize and not talk about it, but really, really do talk about it.
Okay. Well, Lena, it's been so nice to have you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And Addy is out there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so you guys can ask questions to Jess, because she's there.
Yes, we've all got Jess.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now it's time for
IVF.
What the F?
What the F?
We're talking about needing a wee.
Yeah, we are. Because when you go for your embryo transfer, they say, can you please present with a full bladder?
I took that very literally the first time.
Yeah, I did.
Basically showed up bursting. Absolutely bursting for the loo. And to be fair, the embryologist was impressed. They were like, oh, we've got a really clear picture.
Well, so I had known this story about you, mm-hmm. and had also spoken to, I don't know, someone had said it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be bursting for a wee.
Yeah.
So I went with a kind of moderately full bladder.
Yeah.
And when I got there, the nurse was like, is your bladder full? And I was like, yeah, totally. Yeah. And she was like, well, you've still got time to drink some water. Oh. So I like drank load more water that I really fucking didn't need to be honest. And then when I went in, they were like, oh yeah, you really did go for the full bladder. And I was like, for fuck's sake.
Well, the first time I went for a wee straight away afterwards, because I was like, you can't pee out an embryo, everybody says it.
Yeah.
Which you can't, but also no. That transfer failed. And then the second time, I went with a quite full bladder, but not uncomfortably. So I'd I'd been quite careful about how I'd rationed my water. And then I had a coffee just before we went in.
Mm.
Not a real one, obviously. Decaf.
Mm.
And they were pretty happy with it, but I didn't wee for an hour afterwards.
It's a funny one. I just found it very strange because you're already feeling a bit strange, legs akimbo, three people or so, you know, looking, shining a light up your vag.
Yeah.
And, the fucking speculum going up there. And you're thinking, you're wedging apart a bit that I'm trying to squeeze closed so it doesn't fucking wee. Do you know what I mean? And all of a sudden you're like, you've got no defences.
Do you know what we should have asked Professor Tim?
What?
How often do people pee themselves on the table?
Has it ever happened? Have you ever had a golden shower whilst doing a transfer?
It must happen. If anybody's got stories of this.
Oh, God, let us know.
Please let us know. We don't need to share it.
No, just for our own personal enjoyment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really did feel like that might have happened. Do you know what I mean?
But it is a good distraction.
Yeah, that's true.
From the speculum. Anyway.
Well, let's hear what you had to say.
So, a number of clinical studies have looked at whether it's beneficial to perform an embryo transfer under scan guidance or not. These studies certainly show that the live birth rate is significantly higher if an abdominal ultrasound scan is performed at the same time. And the reason for this is that you can judge where the end of the embryo transfer catheter is within the uterine cavity, and studies show that ideally the tip of the catheter should be no closer than 10 to 20 millimeters from the fundus, which is the inside of the top of the cavity. Also, the scan lets you guide the catheter through a cervix if the cervix perhaps is convoluted or it's a difficult transfer. So really best practice today is to perform all embryo transfers under scan guidance. Now, to perform an embryo transfer under scan guidance with an abdominal ultrasound scan, the woman has to have a full bladder. And that's because the full bladder acts as a window onto the uterus. So the scan, ultrasound scan waves from the transducer that sits on the woman's lower abdomen go through the bladder and look at the uterus. So if the woman had an empty bladder, you essentially can't really see the uterus properly. So that's the first benefit of a full bladder, is it lets you get good ultrasound images. The second benefit is that for most women have an antiverted uterus, so sort of a uterus which is tilted forward. When the bladder fills up, it actually pushes the uterus into more of a straight line position. So when the catheter goes through the cervix, it's more likely to be able to go straight through on a straight line up into the uterine cavity. Rather than with an empty bladder, there's likely to be maybe up to a 90 degree angle between the cervix and the uterine cavity, and therefore, unsurprisingly, that can make it more difficult. So in summary, having a full bladder makes an embryo transfer easier, and it also allows you to perform an abdominal ultrasound scan. In terms of how full the bladder should be, that's a difficult one, really. Certainly, it doesn't need to be absolutely bursting, but I think the guidance really would be that the lady should feel as though, you know, she could go to the loo if necessary. But obviously, that will vary from person to person.
Emma, how's your week been?
Well, Gabriella, I'm feeling reflective because in just over a week, I will be in my third trimester.
Jesus.
I know.
That came up fast, didn't it?
Time flies when you're having fun. I say that very speculatively because I haven't really felt the baby kick much today. So maybe I won't be in my third trimester in a week. We'll see.
Don't say that.
It's the freak out. The freak out is back. No, I've been thinking a lot about... So basically last night we went to NCT. It was our second NCT. And she was describing, like, she was basically explaining the process of giving birth and, like, how a kind of, you know, in quotes, normal birth works. And I kind of turned to John and was like, to be honest, I think all this is irrelevant to us because I don't think it's going to work like that for us. And he was like, what are you on about? And I was like, well, I just, like, I don't think, I've never been able to rely on my body before. Like, why would I be able to rely on it now? And then he just looked at me and was like, I think that you're just annoyed that you're not special anymore. And you don't want to be like these people.
John, I love it.
So sympathetic. He was like, you just want to keep being special. And I was like, firstly, ouch. Secondly, like, that's an interesting point.
It
from
is.
From a philosophical point of view.
It is an interesting point.
Because I say my body can't do any of it, but it's
your body's done everything so far.
Yeah, it has.
To date, to this date.
It's done most things so far.
A little bit of bleeding.
There was the old not being able to conceive naturally.
Oh, I mean that. I mean since.
Yeah, since conception, it's behaved pretty much as expected.
Yeah.
In fact, better than some people, because I didn't really have morning sickness.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really have that much tiredness in the first trimester, except for maybe for a couple of weeks. Like, it's actually, it's an improvement on some people's bodies. Yeah. So I thought about it, and then I thought about, like, going into the third trimester and how I felt about pregnancy and all that. And I think I still feel, I've spent a lot of time with a lot of pregnant women this week, because quite a few of my friends are pregnant, and I saw them. And then we did NCT, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I still feel like an outsider. I still feel like an imposter into the whole thing. I feel like somebody at some point is going to be like, got ya. You're not pregnant. Yeah.
Psych.
Yeah, exactly. I found you out. And I don't know if that will ever go away. Maybe when I'm in labour. But it's still like, I still feel fake. And even though now I've got a pretty sizable bump.
Yeah.
I still sometimes look in the mirror. Question?
You've been lying to me all along.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing a Meghan
Markle. Conspiracy theory.
It's It's a really odd feeling, this. And mm. I wonder if it will go away. Ever.
Surely. I think you're right. Like, as you know, you can't deny that you're pregnant.
No.
You've got a nice bump. It's very nice, by the way.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, it's a lovely looking bump.
Even though that nurse said it was too low.
Oh, fuck off.
Oh, midwife, sorry, midwife.
So, you know, I think you are pregnant, and you look pregnant, and you feel pregnant.
I do.
So
it's odd. It's an odd feeling.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think I've just been feeling quite reflective the last few days, just like thinking about it and like thinking about how I feel about all of it. And, you know, I started off pregnancy, A, feeling like I wasn't pregnant, and B, just feeling a lot of guilt that I had managed it when so many other people didn't and haven't and are struggling still. And it's not, every time somebody's been like, so how is it being pregnant? Is it hard? I've gone, no, being infertile is hard.
Mm.
This is a dream. Mm. This is an absolute dream. It's really easy. Like, I haven't cried for like, apart from hormonal moments, for like 6 months.
Yeah, totally.
I haven't like properly sobbed my eyes out for 6 months, which is amazing.
Mm.
Like, because it was a monthly occurrence, that grief, I haven't felt grief for more than that since the end of the kind of bleeding scenario.
Yeah.
It's been replaced by anxiety, but I mean, it's not as bad as grief.
No, it's manageable, isn't it?
It's highly manageable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all in all, I'd say piece of piss compared to infertility, but that's not to say that it's not sometimes a bit weird.
Yeah. Well, of course it's weird.
Yeah.
Your body's doing things it's never done before.
Yeah, my body looks weird to me. Like, yeah. I look in the mirror and I'm like, hey, up, what's going on here? And I weigh a stone and a half more than I weighed before, and that was last week, so probably more than that now. Which is, again, weird, because I've weighed the same since I was, like, 19 years old. Mm. So it's the changes. Sometimes the changes are weird, and sometimes the changes are, like, a crazy science project and really fascinating.
Mm.
I love it when my app is like, this is going to happen to your body this week. And then it actually does happen, except for once it said hemorrhoids. But that hasn't happened.
That hasn't happened?
No, not yet.
Because that's not changed anyone wants.
No. No. But, yeah. Anyway, I'm rambling about being reflective. But there you go.
That's what it's about, mate.
Yes. Gabs, how are you?
I am good. I have had two interesting appointments, okay, as previously discussed last week.
Yeah.
Trailed. Yes, indeed. Real cliffhanger. So I had my scan yesterday, which was the day before 9 weeks. So I'm going to say almost 9 weeks ago.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it was fine. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Baby. Do we call it baby?
Well, you call it what you want, mate.
Yeah. Doesn't feel like a baby yet. Certainly doesn't look like one.
Gablet.
The gablet. Yeah, the gablet was fine.
Good.
Good heartbeat and all of that.
Great.
Seemed to be measuring right, I think. Although the doctor that was doing the measurements, I'm going to say something. Maybe I'm wrong here. But I think she's kind of young and new.
Uh-huh.
And she said things such as, oh, I can't find the yolk sac. So that's measuring it just blah, 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 blah. All these little things that were going into my head, like, what do you mean just? Is it small? Like, what do you mean you can't find it? Is it not there? Do you know? So, like, the whole scan was quite unpleasant. And afterwards, my husband was like, you were very quiet during that scan. And I was like, I was fucking freaking out. Like, it was, I think, my most nerve-wracking one yet. Because she wasn't saying things in the right order. She wasn't starting off by saying it's fine.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think that probably comes with practice.
Did she look very young?
Yeah. She looks younger than me.
Oh, yeah.
Which isn't that young, I know.
No, but it is, like, the thing is that, you know, that really experienced people, they do just go, the baby's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Measuring good, all looking good. Okay, now I'm going to do a bit more detailed.
Yeah.
Do you know?
They kind of don't go, I can't find the yolks.
Yeah, like, oh, Jesus.
But everything was found. And when I kind of questioned her on the sizes of things, she was like, oh no, everything's the right size. I was like, okay, so it's not just anything then. It's, yeah. You know, oh God. So, so that was good. But the reason for the scan was the hematoma.
Yeah.
Harry the hematoma.
Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah. And he's still there.
Okay.
For sure.
Has he shrunk?
Tiny bit, she said. But then she said that might just be the angle.
Great.
Or
it might shrunk loads and it might be the angle.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a bit disappointing, I have to say. I was kind of hoping that would have... I've learnt the new word, reabsorbed. That's what we say.
Yeah, reabsorbed, yeah.
I was hoping that would have reabsorbed by now.
Well, it's all very parasitic, isn't it? The old pregnancy thing.
Oh. But then, you know, she kind of was a bit quite blasé about it, because I kind of had to ask her. I was like, and the hematoma? And she was like, you know, yeah, it's still there. And I was like, and are we worried about that? And she was like, she kind of gave me a stock answer of like, well, you know, it is because you've had bleeding in early pregnancy. There is a higher chance of miscarriage.
Oh God!
But it all looks fine. You know, looking at this now, all looks fine. And I was kind of like, well, am I worried about this hematoma or not? I still don't know.
Have you Googled studies into hematomas?
I've Googled a bit. I haven't Googled a lot, I have to say. But it seems to me. I mean, most of the people that talk about them, it seems to have been fine and it's all resolved. But then I was thinking about, so my hope was that the hematoma would be gone, and mm-hmm. I was kind of looking forward to going for a light jog.
Yeah.
But it's not gone. And I basically, in my reading, a lot of people, and I think this is probably in the States, seem to get prescribed bed rest.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I'm not going to go for a jog if this hematoma is going to be aggravated by that.
Yeah, and no sex either, I think they say as well. Yeah,
no sex. No, it says pelvic rest.
Pelvic rest, yeah.
What the fuck does that mean?
That means no sex.
Okay.
It means quite literally.
Just fucking say no sex.
Pelvic rest and no, like, Elvis style.
I was like, no thrusting. None of that kind of 80s aerobic, John Travolta in that awesome video.
Yeah.
No pelvic thrusts. Yeah, fine, okay. I won't do that.
Okay.
But yeah, anyway, I don't know. I'd like to know a little bit more about them, to be honest, because every doctor at the clinic has kind of been just quite like, I don't, you know, it should be fine. Don't worry too much. We're not that worried. Yeah, but no one's really told me
what it is. Yeah, you want some information.
Why it's there. What will happen to it?
Yeah. Bleeding is so scary. Is it still going? Is it still bleeding?
No, so I'm not I haven't had any bleeding since the day of the bleed.
Okay.
Apart from like tiny bit of brown spotting here and there, which I'm not worried about. So I've been very lucky, like it's stopped, which is why I was kind of hoping it had gone.
Okay.
And I was reading about them and apparently it'll either reabsorb or it will just come out. Yeah, which is a scary thought because that, you know, no matter how much you're prepared for it, it's going to be a frightening thing to have a load of blood gush out.
I think mine kind of did half and half.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Because you had more bleeding when you gave up.
I don't think when I stopped the drugs, I don't think that was anything to do with it because it had gone by then.
Oh, okay.
But I continued spotting for a really long time.
And did you have a scan where they were like, oh, it's gone?
Yeah.
And was that, which scan was that?
That was 9.5 weeks where they were like, there's no evidence of it. And I was like, great.
Thank God.
But at the same time, I was a bit annoyed because I was still bleeding a little bit.
Mm.
So I was kind of hoping that it would stay as explanation.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. It's not great. I'm not delighted by it.
No.
But, you know, I was talking to my friend earlier today, she's like, if the doctor's not worried...
Yeah,
don't be worried.
That's all you can do is just like follow their lead, which is really difficult when they're not giving you any fucking information. You have to go to Dr. Google.
Yeah, exactly. Sucks. It's annoying. But so that happened. Then today I went to the midwife.
Oh my God.
OMFG. That was
intense.
Well, it was quite intense. Quite a long appointment, isn't it?
It is.
An hour and a half talking about, you know, me, medical history.
Was Mr. Gabby there?
No. I did not bring him. I'm kind of glad I didn't bring him. It wasn't really relevant to him.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I did.
But yeah, I liked the midwife. She was really nice.
Cool. Are you going to have the same one all the way through?
So I should have her for all of my appointments, apart cool. from maybe she's getting married in August. So,
oh, okay.
I was like, okay, fine, you can be excused for those appointments. Yeah, she was, I really liked her. She liked my bag. I liked her bag. You know, it's always a good start.
Great
isn't
chat.
It? And yeah, she didn't really. I don't think she knew a lot about IVF, so that was quite interesting. It was kind of, we kind of skirted around those things.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
They treat you like you're just one of the normals. And you're like,
I was like, I'd actually quite like to talk about my traumatic experience of getting pregnant.
Yeah.
It wasn't really traumatic.
I'm actually special.
Yeah. I don't know if you've noticed. but yeah, she was kind of asking me what drugs I was on and stuff. And then she's organised an appointment with a consultant.
Okay.
After my 12-week scan, which I think is basically because she doesn't know a lot about IVF, I think she basically wants to get someone on their side to kind of chat to me about what I've been on and all of that stuff.
That's
cool. What I can gather.
I didn't get that shit.
Yeah. It does seem
quite
nice.
Like a celebrity.
But I am like, you could just go across the road to the clinic and ask them. As kings as well.
Literally there.
Yeah. But yeah, it was good. It made me feel like it was real.
Legit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a way that... and nothing else really has. It's kind of like, well, she seems to think this is happening, so yeah. I guess she's right.
Yeah.
But there is that funny thing about dating it. They don't seem to believe my dates.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? You just have to kind of insist.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's always going to be measuring small and you're always going to be freaking out.
Well, yeah. But or measuring large, because they seem to think my due date is after.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because based on my period, my last period, I think is how they do it, isn't it?
Yeah.
But of course, we know exactly when it fucking happened.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a thing that, like a form that says conception date on it.
Mm.
Like 22nd of November, if anyone's interested or wants to send presents. But it's, yeah, and then they don't really, it's like, I don't know, it's weird. I feel like given how common IVF is.
Yeah.
Like, in
they should know.
The mainstream NHS, they don't really get it.
Because she was like, oh, we'll have to wait till your 12-week scan before we can properly date it. And I'm like, really don't. It's not about when I ovulated.
Yeah.
We know exactly when it happened.
It's weird, isn't it?
It was science. What did it? Spoiler alert. Didn't happen in my body. At some unknown time. It happened in a fucking lab.
It was a miracle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, so I'm going to have a word, I guess, with the sonographer when I go in on for my 12-week scan.
With my one, they were quite like, at the midwife appointment, they were like, so when was the last day of your last period or whatever they asked?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. And she was like, I can tell you the exact day it was conceived, but I can't tell you when my period finished or started or whatever it was.
Started.
And she was like, oh, okay, we'll do it like that then. And then when we went to the... when we did the 12-week scan, the woman was like, it's measuring at this much. And I was like, well, that's dead on.
That's exactly what I've said all along.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it was just...
Because they were calling me... They were saying I was 8 and 2 days, whereas according to my calculations via IVF, I'm exactly 9 weeks today.
Oh, happy 9 weeks.
Thanks, mate. Mm. It's now a pecan.
A pecan. Mm,
yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a bit of a funny one. But hey, that's the way... I mean, it's not bothering me. It's fine, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We've got the information.
Aren't pecans and blueberries about the same size?
Pecans are a bit longer.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, these fucking sizes they give you are random, aren't they?
They're very confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry, I digress.
Anyway, yeah, so do I. But the other thing that happened today is... So I got water-shamed for using... for Lol. Using Pret water bottle.
Yes.
Which you'll all be able to hear in a few weeks. I won't mention it too much. But anyway, what it did mean is that I had to go and get a new water bottle.
Yeah.
So I went to John Lewis today. Buy a water bottle. Jesus Christ, there's lots of water bottles.
There's choice.
There's huge choice.
Yeah.
And then someone on Instagram was like, don't get a BPA-free
Plastic.
Why?
Get glass or metal.
I've got metal. I've got chilies.
I was like, fuck, I think I bought... I don't know if I bought glass or plastic. I think it's plastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's Why not?
It's BPA free.
Yeah, you're fine. You can't go everything free. Because as the person who shall remain nameless, who we spoke to and water bottle shamed you, pointed out, there's only so many things you can do.
No, but this is the thing I am doing, Emma.
Yeah, I know. But, but what she pointed out was there's only so many things that you can avoid.
Yeah.
And then BPAs is one thing you can avoid. So just avoid those and everything else. Just like, fuck off.
Oh, whatever. And anyway.
Yeah.
So I've got a new bottle. I'm quite excited about it because it's like shaped like a like an army kind of hip flask. So it's like kind of flat.
Oh, I used to have that one.
Oh, yeah.
What's it called? What's the brand?
Hip, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to have that one and then I lost it.
Oh.
I know. My friend Hannah gave it to me. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Hannah. Yeah, so I'm quite happy. That's quite cool.
Yeah.
And the other thing I bought, actually, give me a second.
Listeners, there's some great tissue paper rustling going on.
Inspired by your present giving last weekend.
Yeah.
I decided to get you a present.
Oh, you didn't need to get me a present.
Well, I decided it because we were meant to go for a pedicure today, weren't we?
We were, but then they told us we couldn't.
No. So I got you a little...
did you get me a pedi toxic, items?
Toxic-free...
Oh.
Nail varnish.
Oh, mate. Oh. Oh, I love the colour.
You like it?
Yeah. Oh, that is beautiful. I'm going to give myself a pedi tonight.
Yeah, it's got no budget in it.
If I can reach my toes.
Sorry, I didn't think of that. I should have hired John as well before giving it to you.
Oh, mate, that's gorgeous. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't need to get me a present, though. That's not the point.
I know it wasn't the point.
It's beside the point.
But you're going on holiday.
I am
you
going on holiday.
Let's have a little treat.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, mate.
Welcome. I've got one for myself, obviously.
Did you?
Yeah, I'm going to paint my toes.
Sweet.
I haven't painted my toes since I started IVF.
Just don't press the pressure points that the pedicurist told me.
She could tell us where the fuck
bring
they
on
are,
early labour.
Where are those pressure points? People have pedicures all the time who are pregnant.
Yeah, I know. But this is a posh place.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I just don't want to put... I also... They were like, you can bring on early labour, so you've got to be over 12 weeks. But I was like, I don't want to go into labour. So I'm not going to have a pedicure either.
What, so it's okay for someone who's 13 weeks to go into early labour?
Exactly. That's still not ideal, is it?
That's very strange. I suppose I don't... Yeah, maybe it is you're not meant to have them until 12 weeks. I don't know. I don't know anyone that did.
Anyway, thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome. Have a great holiday.
Thanks, I will. And we're done.
It's a wrap.
It's a wrap.
Cut.
I think you say cut first.
Cut!
I'll check with John, but I'm pretty sure it's cut, then it's a wrap.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Not that I've ever been on set, even though I'm married to someone who spends their lives there. Yeah. Join us next week.
Join us.
Oh, no, don't join us next week.
The week after next week.
Join us the week after next week when we will be talking to the lovely Becky. Becky Kearns, aka At Defining Mum.
Yeah.
About early menopause and using egg donors.
Donors.
I was going to say donation and I said donors at the very last minute.
Sounded a bit West Country, but that's all right.
It's all right. It's where I hail from.
Exactly. So that's, it's a really interesting conversation whether you're interested in egg donation or not.
Yeah. And also, she's quite a lovely person.
She's bloody lovely.
So
she really is.
Yeah.
We'll miss you when we're not here, but we will be back.
I'll write your postcard.
Oh, thanks, Em.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.